As you all know, we live in a time of great political divide, of extreme partisanship, and it's not unusual to hear people saying harsh things across the political aisle. But it still draws our attention and makes news when people in the same party say some harsh things to each other. Trey Gowdy, who is the chairman of the House committee that has been investigating the deaths of four Americans in Benghazi, Libya, in 2012, appeared last Sunday on the morning show Face the Nation, and he pushed back against some of the allegations that were made by fellow Republicans that the investigation has become politically motivated. Gowdy told Republican colleagues, quote, to shut up talking about things that you don't know anything about. In other words, put a sock in it. I'm tired of having you say things that are irritating. Well, in our next strip shooting, we're going to hear a man who heard the crowd tell him, put a sock in it, shut up, pipe down. And those words come not merely from one chairperson of a committee, but from an entire crowd of people. This man has gotten on their nerves. Listen now for God's word to you as I share this passage from the Gospel of Mark. Jesus and the disciples came to Jericho. And as they, together with a large crowd, were leaving the city, a blind man, Bartimaeus, which means son of Timaeus, was sitting by the roadside begging. When he heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth, he began to shout, Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me. Many rebuked him and told him to be quiet. But he shouted all the more, Son of David, have mercy on me. Jesus stopped and said, call him. So they called to the blind man, cheer up, on your feet, he's calling you. Throwing his cloak aside, he jumped to his feet and came to Jesus. What do you want me to do for you? Jesus asked him. The blind man said, Rabbi, I want to see. Go, said Jesus. Your faith has healed you. Immediately he received his sight and followed Jesus along the road. May God bless to our hearing and to our living this reading from God's holy word. This past Thursday, there was a forum held at the White House about criminal justice reform, and the president weighed in, provided some comments that were unprompted about what the Washington Post has deemed the simmering controversy over the phrase Black Lives Matter. More specifically, the president gave his thoughts about the idea that the phrase is a threat or a verbal affront or some kind of intentional effort to undervalue the lives of others. The president said these words. He says, I think that the reason that the organizers used the phrase Black Lives Matter was not because they were suggesting that no one else's lives matter. Rather, what they were suggesting was that there is a specific problem that is happening in the African-American community that's not happening in other communities. And that is a legitimate issue that we've got to address. He went on to note that the African-American community was not just making this up. Rather, he said it's real, and there's a history behind it, and we have to take it seriously. What the president was underscoring is that while all lives do indeed matter, it has always been true since the dawn of humanity that some lives matter more than other lives. If all lives really mattered equally, for example, we wouldn't be struggling with things like gender inequality in pay. We wouldn't have the statistical evidence that shows that there is racial disparity in our criminal justice system. We wouldn't need to try to pass laws that protect the rights of the LGBT community. It might be true, and it is true, theologically it's absolutely true that all lives matter, but in our world, we see constant evidence that some lives matter more and some lives matter less. That existed in Jesus' day as well. Back then, lives didn't matter more or less depending on race, because race wasn't even really invented, fictionalized, until the Middle Ages. But back in Jesus' day, lives did matter more or less depending upon things like religion, gender, ethnicity, and also about physical wellness or physical attributes. Back in Jesus' day, if you had a physical disability, you carried around with you a great stigma, an understanding that somehow you had done something spiritually wrong to warrant that kind of disability. We see that thinking exposed, for example, in the early part of John's Gospel. We find these words: as Jesus went along, he saw a man blind from birth. His disciples asked him, "Rabbi, who sinned? This man or his parents, that he was born blind?" Who is it that did something wrong that's responsible for this man's blindness? So you know that by being blind, you already carry around an assumption in Jesus' day that theologically you are an abomination in God's eyes. And indeed, in the law of Moses, that's spelled out pretty clearly and affirmed. The book of Leviticus, where the writer lays out all the requirements for who might indeed serve in a priestly role, we find these words: for the generations to come, none of your descendants who has a defect may come near to offer the food of his God. No man, because women weren't allowed to do this, who has any defect may come near. No man who is blind or lame, disfigured or deformed, keep them away from the altar of God. They're not really, truly on equal footing with those who don't have such defects. So those with such disabilities were clearly directed to be marginalized, to be out of sight, to be at the periphery. They were told to be rejected. They were shunned. They weren't allowed not only to not serve the God in the temple, but they also weren't really allowed to serve any sort of honorable profession or occupation. Their lot in life was to beg. Because of their physical disability, their station in life was to be dependent upon the coins of compassion that people might toss their way as they quickly walked by them. People might have said back then, yes, the lives of blind people matter, but really they mattered a whole lot less than those with sight. So when we meet Bartimaeus here in this passage, he's living out his assigned role. He's got it. He understands, I'm blind. So my job is to beg. So every day he finds this spot along this road between Jericho and Jerusalem. He spreads out his cloak in front of him, hoping that people might just toss him some crumbs as they walk by. He's been sitting there for who knows how long. It could be weeks, months, or years. All we're told by Mark is that one day, this blind beggar, who's been pushed to the edge of society, hears that this rabbi named Jesus is heading his way. And he responds instantly. He cries out, "Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me." Even though he's been told over and over again, "You don't matter. Be quiet. You're an abomination." Even though he's heard all those words, something within him dares to lift up his voice and to cry out. He dares to believe that maybe, just maybe, what his society teaches and what the law of Moses declares, maybe, despite all of that, maybe to God he does matter. Maybe in God's eyes, blind lives matter. Maybe in God's eyes, Jesus will stop and do something. Maybe, just maybe, I matter to Jesus. So he lets it fly. He cries out, "This is my moment. Jesus, have mercy on me." And the crowd responds in no uncertain terms, "Shut up! We don't want to hear it! You're annoying us! Just go away!" It's often the way that the crowd responds when people make their plight known. It was in response to that kind of response to Black Lives Matter that led the president to share his words. Many people in our culture today feel in response to that movement, "Just shut up. Just go away. You're annoying us. We don't want to hear it." But the story shows us, see, that how the crowd thinks, what gets embodied in a cultural mindset may not be close to the way that God thinks. In fact, God tells us that over and over again. The most direct way, perhaps, was through the prophet Isaiah when God says, "For my thoughts are not your thoughts, and neither are your ways my ways. As high as the heavens are above the earth, so are my thoughts and your thoughts, and my ways than your ways." To God, all lives matter, and they all matter equally. It's not that some lives have been given a small amount of matter and others more. No, in God's eyes, they all human life is equally matters, equal of value. And Jesus shows that over and over again in the Gospels by going against the conventional wisdom. The Jews thought that Gentile lives didn't really matter, but Jesus says, "No, really the Gentiles' lives matter as much as Jewish lives." In Jesus' day, women's lives did not matter like males' lives did, but Jesus calls women to be his followers. Certainly in Jesus' day, sinners were told, "You don't belong," but that's who we always seem to invite as dinner guests. He was always trying to say that all lives in God's kingdom matter equally. But the religious leaders just couldn't get their minds around that. So Mark here tries to show us, you know, who's really blind and who's not. You have this guy who can't see who somehow figures out intuitively that Jesus might respond to his cries. That Jesus might be a man of deep compassion and mercy. He sees something about Jesus that gives him hope. He didn't get that with these eyes. He got it some other way. But those people in the crowd, those with 20/20 vision, they don't see Jesus that way. They think that acting on Christ's behalf, what he really wants this man to do is to be quiet. They don't understand Jesus. They don't know how he thinks. The majority here has it wrong. The blind man sees. The crowd is blind to what really matters to God. The blind man sees it correctly. Jesus does have compassion. He does hear the cries of this man who's been marginalized. And he tells the crowd, "Bring him to me." This man's cries have reached the ears of God, and Jesus calls him forth. He says, "What do you want me to do for you?" And Bartimaeus says, "Rabbi, I'm going to put it out there. I want to see. I want to stop being blind. I don't want to beg anymore. I want a life that's reflective of who I am, the child of God. Can you make it happen?" And Jesus does make it happen. His prayer is answered, and Bartimaeus goes from sitting beside the road to walking down the road now with Jesus. And it's a road that will take Jesus to Jerusalem. And the same crowds that tell Bartimaeus to shut up will be telling Pilate to crucify Jesus. And Jesus walks that road. He stays on that path. Because he knows that human life matters to God so deeply, so profoundly, that God is willing, it is God's desire to allow His own Son's life to be given in love for all people. And in that expression of Christ on the cross, we see God saying, this is how much every human life matters to me. It matters to the point that I allowed my own Son to be crucified. Unfortunately, we live in a world that is still blind to that truth, that can't understand the Father's love for all people. And so, while in God's eyes every life matters equally, that reality is far from true in this world. Lives vary deeply in how much they matter, still depending upon gender and age and income and religion, and race. And so for that reason, the Jesus who walked to Jerusalem to show us in His death how much God values us, created a body of believers, a physical manifestation in this world, and He gave us the commission to do the very things that He did, to carry out His purpose in our world. And one of the things that that certainly has to mean is that we are called, like Jesus in the story, to hear and to respond to the cries of those whose lives matter less than others in our world. Our calling is not to be the crowd, to tell others to be quiet, go away, stop complaining, you're annoying me. Our calling is not to turn a deaf ear or a blind eye to the plight of those who continue to be marginalized, disregarded, and mistreated. Lord knows there are lots and lots of people willing to do just that. Now, the church's calling is to help our blind world to see something. God, to see something of the mercy, love, and grace that God has for all of His children. And that means that we are called to make our laws more just, our society more equitable. It means that we are called to hear and to learn and to understand the plight of those who are crying out from systemic oppression and become advocates for affirming the value and dignity of those who have been sorely mistreated. I mean, if Jesus did one thing in His life, it seems to me it was that. Our denomination's brief statement of faith put it so beautifully. It says, in a broken and fearful world, the Spirit gives us courage to pray without ceasing, to witness among all peoples to Christ as Lord and Savior, to unmask idolatries in church and culture, to hear the voices of peoples long silenced, and to work with others for justice, freedom, and peace. Our world is indeed broken, full of fear. But the Spirit gives us courage to do the work of Christ. The Spirit calls us as we travel along our roads, as we journey through our lives, to hear and to respond to the cries of the people like Bartimaeus in our culture. Those who have been told, you don't count. Those who have been told, this is all you can do. This is all you are able to do. This is all we will let you do. To restore human dignity. To speak truth and love. To create a more just world. That is the work that we have been entrusted with. by the grace and by the mercy of God. And may we, as God's people, allow the Spirit to give us the courage to do that, for our world is in such need of those who are able to live, to show the love and the mercy of Christ. All praise and honor and glory are due to this God, today, tomorrow, and forevermore.